Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen.
And Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
Listening to the best of the Browns.
Ball game over! Browns win! Browns win!
A weekly mix of 92.3 The Fan's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
All right, so we had Mary Kay Cabot on for the Plain Dealer Cleveland.com last segment, and we're talking so much about evaluating the quarterback. How's the quarterback going to look? What is it going to look like? What kind of an offense are they going to run? Okay, but what about the offense in general and how they are going to coach Dylan Gabriel up? It's one thing to say, Jason, that you have the utmost confidence in somebody regardless of what round they picked. I mean, Cam Ward was the first overall pick, and he has looked lost. He's had no chance. His offensive line's been terrible. Yeah. He's like 10 of 27 last game. That is abysmal. So people say it can't get worse than Joe Flacco. I'll give you Exhibit A in Cam Ward. It can get worse. I'll give you DTR a few years ago. It can get worse. So what do they do to make sure it doesn't get worse and that they actually have an offense that'll work for this youngster?
I think they go back to the offense that they wanted to run all along, and that includes play action, bootlegs, rollouts. Get the quarterback on the move, make things easy for him, a couple short pitch and catch options, and get him in the flow of the offense, establish the run game. Everything that they've been trying to do is still on the table for them to do. And, you know, we were talking about in between segments. Last year, the offensive, everyone was screaming early on about how terrible the offensive line looked and how, oh my goodness, these guys are old, they're terrible, they're awful. Well, a lot of it had to do with Deshaun. He was holding the ball too long and he wasn't where he was supposed to be. And I wrote about it after the season. They would set protections for him to be at a certain depth in a certain space, and he wasn't there. And it messed up a lot of things. All that went away when Jameis went in, and suddenly the line didn't look nearly as bad. Now, I'm not saying Flacco is setting up where he's not supposed to be, but I do think just the immobility of him back there has really cut off a lot of what they can do. So just having a mobile, athletic quarterback who can move around the pocket, who can protect himself, who can... If there's nobody open, he can at least scramble enough to give you 2 or 3 yards or throw the ball away. I think it's going to make a big difference.
Well, I said at one point, based on how bad the tackles were getting beat, that it seemed like Detroit had not one Myles Garrett, but two in that game. That's how quickly they were disposing of the backup linemen that they were navigating against and getting to Joe Flacco, who, I'll give him credit, he hung in the pocket and took some hits.
Yeah.
And he absorbed hits and still, yeah, was he a little late on throws? Was he a little off? Yeah, but he was still putting the ball on guys' hands, right? So I understand Joe's been part of the problem, right? He's had some inconceivable mistakes, but I guess if you follow Joe Flacco's career, not that inconceivable. He's going to, when he sees press coverage, he is going to take his shots. Obviously, on the first one, I mean, you can't condone it. There was some miscommunication. The second one I put on Judy.
Yes, I do too.
Look, he's going to take the few shots they get in this offense. He's going to take them. And you got to have a reliable receiver. You've got to, at some point, you got him as your number one wide receiver. You traded for him. You paid him. You're going to take some shots.
Yeah, drops are inevitable. You're going to have drops. Every receiver is going to have drops. But when the big play opportunities are as few and far between as they are on the Browns, mistakes are even more glaring and drops hurt even more. So, you know, if the offense is rolling and things are looking better and Judy drops one, it's not that big of a deal. When you're in the position the Browns are in and Judy drops one, it feels devastating.
Yeah. We heard this yesterday. Ross Tucker was on the afternoon show And I thought it was an interesting breakdown. Now, this will skew to the negative, but he's just, to me, he's giving you a reality of what it's like in this league against experienced defensive coordinators when you are a rookie.
I also think he's going to see some things that he hasn't before from Flores. And, like, I wouldn't be surprised if all of you had a pick six. I don't know if you can prop bet that or whatever, but he's going to be trying to get the ball out quickly, and the Vikings know that. So they're going to try to jump these quick passes underneath, and I would not be surprised if Isaiah Rodgers or somebody takes one back to the house.
All right, so that's Ross Tucker on the afternoon show. And, by the way, he did compare, I want to be fair, Ross Tucker compared him at times during that interview to Kirk Cousins. I think he said Tua as well. I don't know how people will feel about that necessarily. But, you know, he's just talking
about... Tua's an upgrade over the quarterback play the Browns have gotten.
Yeah, that is true. And so he's talking about a profile in general.
Yeah.
So he knows why Stefanski seems to like this kid. You know, I heard Stefanski yesterday. I didn't necessarily hear the same vote of confidence maybe you did by listening to Stefanski for making the move. Maybe he's just being Stefanski at this point.
He's just Kevin-ing it.
Yeah, that could be.
He downplays everything. I, you know, Kevin, I think, likes Dylan quite a bit. I think Kevin's a big reason why Dylan Gabriel's here, and I think he's got a lot of trust in him.
Yeah.
He's not going to gas the kid up before his first ever NFL start. Because, I mean, listen, Sunday could be a disaster. And that doesn't mean they're going to go away from him after one game. But, you know, under all the circumstances, this is a tough task to put him, you know, the Vikings and the Steelers back-to-back weeks. That's a tall task for a rookie. And it may be rough and ugly earlier. I've said I think he's going to be competent, and I do think he will be competent. But if it's rough and ugly, I'm not going to be terribly surprised. But I do think it'll get better as the longer he's in there.
Well, his mobility is going to present definitely a curveball to anybody who's been watching film on the Browns this year.
Yeah,
they're going to say, "Oh, yeah." I guess we can't just come at it from these angles every time because you know he could take off and run. I do wonder how he will utilize his wheels in this game. We know the bootlegs. I mean, you remember the early Baker days with Stefanski when the bootlegs were working?
He was excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent on rollouts to the right.
Yeah, I don't know what happened over time. Maybe it's just enough film on anybody and their tendencies. It gets tougher because it got really hard for Baker towards the end on those rollouts. And I know they've called some of those with Flacco. If Flacco does get back out there, you're probably going to need to scrap those, especially when you have him going to the wrong side and throwing across his body with guys in his face. That's probably not the right way to attack it, but I am curious to see what that offense looks like so that we don't get what Ross Tucker said, which is a pick six, because what you can't have, especially for all the veterans on this team, you can't have this thing spiral early.
Yeah, you have to move the pocket because of the size limitations of Dylan. So he has to be on the move, and we talked about earlier, he's probably going to have a pass or two knocked down. That's just the reality of what you're dealing with. What you can't have is a tip ball that becomes an interception going the other way. That's the bigger fear to me than a batted. If you get a ball knocked down the line of scrimmage, so be it. It's an incomplete pass. Move on. If you have one tipped, it's now a 50-50 ball, and they're going the other way with it. That's a much larger concern.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen and Anthony Lima. Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
Kevin Stefanski making the move to Dylan Gabriel. Yesterday, they all kind of coalesced around the move. We heard from Dylan Gabriel, heard from Joe Flacco. Everybody was acting like professionals. And then Stefanski had this to say when it came to making the move and the confidence in the kid.
From the second he's been here, he's been working very hard, very intelligent young man. He's done a nice job throughout practice. This whole season, he's been learning how to get yourself ready and understand the rhythm of an NFL week and what that looks like as a backup, and now feel like he's ready to go in as a starter.
And he was asked about getting reps, and he's like, yeah, he's been getting reps, but did not go into great detail about just how much, how involved he's been throughout.
Well, the way it was explained to me was like, if there's 8 reps in a practice session, Joe would get 6 and Dylan would get 2 in terms of weekly preparation.
That's life in the NFL.
Yeah, it is. I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm like, that's standard. You're the quarterback, starting quarterback gets 90% of the reps.
Yeah, and I know it's been a bizarre situation altogether. And then when we learned on the TV broadcast, I think in week 2 or week 3, I think it was Ross Tucker actually that was like, yeah, they're actually getting a package together at the end of practice for Shedeur Sanders. And when I heard that, I'm like, well, isn't Dylan Gabriel getting work in too? Well, now we find out, yes, he's been getting some work in, you know, during practice. Either way, none of it is a substitute for actual NFL game action. And none of this matter, you know, preseason stuff. And yes, he had some nice drives against guys who are not in the NFL anymore that played for the Rams. Like, yeah, that he looked good at times during those moments, but none of it is a substitute for what we're going to see on Sunday. And this is creating a lot of interest for me. I do not expect him to play well, and I'm just not a huge fan of him in general. But this is giving me a big time reason to wake up early on Sunday and see a new potential era of Browns quarterbacking.
So that's interesting. Define well. You don't think he's going to play well. What does that mean? What is that?
I think you have a veteran, one of the great defensive coordinators, yep, in all of football, that when he heard that news, now maybe he was licking his chops anyway at Joe Flacco.
Absolutely.
But when he heard, oh, that's the guy I get to go up against, meaning Browns are going to dumb it down. There are going to be a lot of short, quick reads. He's like, I'll have my guys ready to go for that. That's never been a thing, I think, that a defensive coordinator like him, especially with the exotic blitz schemes and everything, because if they're ready for the short, quick stuff, then what does that set up on third down? That sets up passing situation, third down. Here we go, exotic blitzes coming at every angle, stuff he's never seen before, especially at the speed of an NFL defense. Like, I imagine Brian Flores is pretty excited.
And don't forget, Flores was the runner-up to the job here.
Yeah.
So that's a little extra.
Yeah, good point.
But he's not the one on the field. Like, the players don't care that he was the runner-up for the DC job here. But for him, I'm sure that provides a little extra something. I actually think Dylan is going to be competent. I don't think he's going to be a star. I don't think he's not throwing for 300 yards or anything like that. But I do think he's going to get them into the right calls. I think he can get them lined up. I think he can complete passes, get the ball out quickly, and keep the chains moving and not turn the ball over. And that's what they're looking for right now. You're just looking for competency. And I do think I think he's going to surprise people. And again, not saying he's the starting quarterback here for the next decade. Don't think that's the case. But the only thing truly holding him back really is size. And there are other quarterbacks smaller, his size and smaller, who've had success. Now, a lot of them are probably a little bit more athletic than what he is. So that's a bad combination. And really, the size thing to me leads to injury concerns more than anything. How can he hold up over the rest of the season?
Because they all get hit eventually.
Oh, yeah. He's going to take some shots. And can he keep getting up and keep getting up? But in terms of the mental side of the game, I have no concerns about Dylan on that. Arm strength, no concerns. It really comes down to size more than anything with him.
Well, I looked at it this way, and 216-474-0092, I would wonder if this changes the interest level for Browns fans, because everybody was telling me yesterday, yeah, we don't know if Dylan Gabriel's good, but we need a spark. We need something different. It's not Joe Flacco. We knew where the Joe Flacco stuff was going. He's 40 years old. Yep. What's the point? Okay, well, you got your wish. Now, how confident are you? You made a good case. You made a good case on why they could do this. Maybe they could scheme it. You know, Stefanski, he can scheme a drive. Yeah. Well, can he scheme a half? Can he keep him in the game? Can it not be the DTR situation from a few years ago?
He got P.J. Walker to beat the 49ers at home.
Yeah.
So, like, and again, this is going to open up more of the playbook than what they've been running. What they've been running at this point is very bland, very vanilla, because it has to be with the quarterback situation. And these receive, we talked about it last year. The offense they tried to run last year was mind numbing. This is not a talented receiver room that can create separation.
No.
And last year, some of the routes that they were running did not align with the talent that they had. So this year, now that you have a quarterback who can move a little bit, now you know what the receivers are capable and not capable of doing. I do think that there's a path to make all of this work. Obviously, you would like better tackle play. You've got to get something more out of these tackles than what you've gotten. But you can run inside with Quinshon. You can move the pocket a little bit now with the quarterback. this is never going to be an offense that is deep shot after deep shot, chunk play after chunk play. But I think that there is a way to create advantages and to create enough chunk plays to keep you in this. And the defense is going to keep you in games. All you have to do is not turn the ball over and give your opponent short fields. Like, that's a huge part of this. I think I was on Monday. Monday. I was on with you Monday. We were talking about this. The Lions went 41 yards to get 24 of their points. In a 34-10 win, the Lions needed 24 offensive yards, 41 offensive yards to get 24 offensive points. That is what kills this team. If you just eliminate that, just eliminate the mistakes and make your opponent drive the length of the field, you're going to be competitive and you're going to have chances to win at the end of the game.
Well, part of it is, and admittedly, I don't look to Tennessee very often when trying to make comparisons about the Browns, but you know, they are starting their number one overall pick, right? Yeah, and that guy is on paper, his profile, way more talented, just the profile in general, way more advanced than Dylan Gabriel, who most think got overdrafted by the Browns where he did. And they've got the offensive line coach that, you know, we've been missing, right? And, you know, Callahan is over there, and he's getting his ass kicked, and it's not looking good.
No.
And so that's the only thing that it pauses me. I'm like, you got to have a particular set of skills here. I just don't know that Dylan Gabriel, I would not be stunned at all, Jason, if he just looks overwhelmed in his first NFL game.
If Dylan Gabriel is 6'2¾", where do you think he gets drafted?
Oh, first round.
Okay.
Yeah.
So all it comes down to is size. And I'm not saying that's nothing, because it's something. It's significant. But if you can put him in advantageous situations to overcome that, what are you scared of? What are you scared of?
I'm just scared of the turnstiles at tackle. And I know they're hoping to have Conklin.
And that's fair.
And do we have an update on whether or not Cam Robinson is going to be available?
Well, what's funny is if you get Conklin back, now suddenly that's the more important tackle, because your quarterback's left-handed. So, and I do think there's a chance for Sunday, I think. But, you know, if you get him back, that's a massive, massive upgrade to the blind side now of your quarterback. So I'm just saying, like, if the height is the biggest thing that you're concerned about with Dylan, it's fair. But if you can, that's on Kevin now to figure out ways to overcome that. And if you can overcome that, and he's going to get passes knocked, batted down, that's going to happen. It's going to happen if it happens the first quarter, second quarter, everyone's going to throw their hands up and say, see, this is why he's not an NFL quarterback. He's getting passes batted down. Okay, well, if he gets two knocked down a game, now if they get tipped and turn into interceptions, that's a problem. If they're getting batted down, okay, it's an incomplete pass, move on to the next play. But if you can overcome the size, I don't know that there's a ton of other limitations in his game. That's just a really big one to overcome.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen
and Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.
On the line is Nick Costos, host of You Better You Bet and Odyssey Sports Betting Insider. Insider calls are presented by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Check the latest lines on the BetMGM app and catch You Better You Bet Wednesday from 3 to 7 p.m. Eastern, and You Better You Bet countdown to kickoff on Sunday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., leading you right into kickup. And you can hear that on the BetMGM network right there on the Odyssey app. You're up, Nick.
Nick! What's going on, guys? How are we doing today?
We have elimination baseball in Cleveland for the second day in a row. That's how it's going.
Oh, and here in New York as well for the second day in a row with my New York Yankees.
So How about that?
Three elimination games in baseball, Thursday night football tonight. Guys, it is why October is the best sports month of the year.
Let's start with baseball. Let's start it in our town. Who do you like today?
So I like the Guardians a little bit, but I think that this is, it's a really interesting game. So at BetMGM, the Guards are minus 125 favorites. The Tigers at plus 105. The total of the game is 7. That's been bet down a little bit from 7.5 to 7. And I agree with that move. Now, if anyone out there listening, and this is a Cleveland audience, so the answer is probably going to be no. But if anyone out there had blind faith in the Tigers' bats being able to come alive, I do think that Detroit would be the bet in this game. Detroit has a more well-rested bullpen after the Guards have deployed their best relievers for the last couple days. Detroit, 2-for-23 in this series, obviously, with runners in scoring position. Couldn't get anyone home yesterday in game number two. So, if you wanted to say, well, I think Detroit's bats are going to flip it on. I think they're going to get those hits in the big spots. Detroit's got, you know, maybe you want to say they have the starting pitching advantage just because of Flaherty's postseason experience, but they have a more well-rested bullpen. Maybe that leads you to want to bet the Tigers. I am skeptical with the way Detroit ended the season to just say, well, I think in this critical spot on the road with the season on the line that the bats are just going to come to life here. So it's not a strong opinion. I'll be candid. I think both these teams stink. I'm not trying to be rude to the Cleveland fans.
Stink,
I don't think
overall or stink offensively?
Hey, we've had a lot of conversations about bathing on this show.
Well, I'm not sure if they wear deodorant. I'm hoping they wear deodorants. But I think that Seattle will beat either of these teams in the next round. I don't think that's like a scorching hot take to say. Give me two teams that I don't think are great. One choked down the stretch. I'll bet the Guardians today to win game three and advance to the divisional series.
So there's always an adage in baseball when it comes to the postseason, Nick, of ball go far, team go far. It's been kicked around in the analytics community for a long time. Has that found its way into the betting market? Is that something you maybe look at when trying to pick winners?
You like broke up in my headset a little bit. Can you say that one more time?
Sorry, there's an adage that's gone around in baseball analytics for a long time of ball go far, team go far. Is that something that you've seen as well in the betting markets? Do you look for that kind of thing?
Well, I would say that maybe the opposite as far as betting baseball is concerned in the postseason. And look, my favorite team has been an example of this so many times over the past, since they won the World Series, the Yankees did in 2009, where they construct these teams that don't play small ball and can't really drive runs in unless it's via the home run. And that's all well and good when you're beating up on the dregs of the American League or the National League in the regular season. And it gets you to high 80s, you know, in the 90s, maybe even low 100s in the win column. But then when you get to the postseason and you're facing the best pitchers and all those bad teams are not in the postseason and the worst pitchers aren't in the postseason or they're not pitching for their teams, they've got better options, then I think that well can kind of dry up a little bit. So look, obviously if you knew a team was going to hit a bunch of home runs, you'd want to bet them in a postseason game. But I'm always weary of that. And maybe that's my Yankee fandom bias coming through a little bit, where I've seen this so many times where the Yankees hit a billion home runs in the regular season and then the postseason rolls around and the bats go silent and they end up losing games. So I really think that like pitching, defense, small ball matters way more in the postseason. And just to carry that over to another game today, I do like the Cubs in their elimination game against the Padres today. Even with Jameson Taillon, whom I don't love, pitching against Yu Darvish, the Cubs are a way better defensive team and a way better base running team than the Padres. So maybe if you said the game was in San Diego, you'd like the Padres a little bit. The game is in Wrigley, and I think the Cubs do the little things way better. So I do like the Cubs to win that series in advance to the NLDS.
Nick Costos joining us, our Odyssey Sports Betting Insider. How about your Yankees? And if they don't get it done against Boston, is Aaron Boone looking for work?
Well, I know, because I think I call them Supreme Court Justice Cashman and Boone. They have the job until death, unfortunately, because I don't know. I don't know what other reason there'd be why they're still employed. Boone's been the manager since 2018, haven't won a championship, got to the World Series in lucky fashion last year, and look, like, we can all be honest, right? Like, my Yankees beat your Guardians in the ALCS last year. Like, neither team was really great, and the Dodgers wiped the Yankees off the face of the earth. So I think Boone would come back, even if the Yankees lost this game. They've kind of, like, beaten me down and broken my spirit. If George were still alive, he would have fired these two clowns years ago. So I do think that they'll come back. I think the betting market is correct in this game. the Yankees are a -160 favorite at BetMGM. I really think that's fair. Cam Schlittler is pitching for the Yankees. Don't say that name five times fast, but he was great in his rookie season for the Yankees, and I think he's someone that you can trust. The Red Sox will be starting a pitcher today named Connelly Early, who has made almost no starts in his major league career, is a rookie. Now, he's got great stuff, so he's a really, really good pitcher, but this is a tough spot where the Yankees absolutely destroy lefties. So the Yankees should, in theory, be able to get to Early and take a lead in this game, and then hopefully Schlittler goes deep and the Yankees don't have to lean on this bullpen that's been taxed in terms of the best relievers used the last couple days. So I think pregame, this betting market is fair. What I will say is that if the Red Sox get out to a lead early in this game, if they get to Schlittler early, and Early, the pitcher on the Red Sox, if he's looking good, Boston's bullpen is way more well-rested than the Yankees' bullpen. Now, they might not have Garrett Whitlock, who's their setup guy. He threw 41 pitches last night and took the loss, but they'll have Aroldis Chapman available probably for multiple innings in this game. They'll have their other relievers available for multiple innings in this game. So if the Red Sox jump out to a lead, I think the Yankees are going to be in trouble. So pregame, no bet for me. I think if you wanted to bet this game live and Boston leads early, I would look to take a stab actually with the Boston Red Sox. It pains me to say that. The Yankees should win the game. I'm skeptical that they will.
Okay.
Nick Costos joining us, Odyssey Sports Betting Insider. All right, let's head to the football side of things. The Browns announced they are making a change to rookie quarterback Dylan Gabriel, and the betting markets didn't move.
Yep,
what does that tell us?
Yeah, well, it tells you that that Joe Flacco has been atrocious as the Browns quarterback. And it's not just, look, it's not his fault entirely. I think some of it is his fault, but some of it is like the way that they're calling this offense. And I don't even mean that as an insult. So think about this, right? And you guys and your fans of the show, like you guys watch the Browns games. So as the Browns are trailing big at the end of the Lions game last week, they're not spreading the field with four receivers and throwing the ball on every play. Like, they're still lining up in 12 personnel and running the ball with Quinshon Judkins, which I think gives you a kind of hint as to what this offense is going to be like with Dylan Gabriel, and then probably eventually later this season, you would think Shedeur Sanders is going to get his chance to play. Like, the Browns are going to play 12 personnel. They're going to have multiple tight ends on the field. They're going to run the ball a ton. Even when they're losing, they're going to run the ball a ton. And I think they're going to try and limit the variance on offense. And I actually think that's really smart from Kevin Stefanski. So the betting market not moving tells you that that bettors see no difference between Joe Flacco and Dylan Gabriel. And maybe Gabriel gives you more escapability, obviously, than the statuesque Joe Flacco. Now, from open guys, this opened Minnesota -4.5. We are now at Vikings -3.5. So the Browns have been the preferred betting side this week. And that has nothing to do with Dylan Gabriel on the offense. And it has everything to do with the injured state of this Minnesota Vikings offensive line, which could be down. Now, it's Thursday morning, right? So we'll see what the injury report has to hold. Could be down three starters this week. And we saw what it looked like last week against Pittsburgh's front, where Carson Wentz is under siege the entire game. And they had that late game comeback, but the Steelers authentically won that game. And I don't think the Steelers' defense is as good as Cleveland's defense. So I actually did, guys. I bet Cleveland +4.5 earlier in the week. I think Cleveland +3.5 is still pretty good. I would not be shocked if the Browns won this game this weekend. But again, just to go back to something I told you guys before week one, that this season should be judged based on how the young players perform. It looks like they are all good. Like, all of them look like they're pretty good. Mason Graham, Schwesinger, Harold Fannin, Isaiah Bond. This looks like an absolute home run for Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski and the Browns as far as the young players go. So we'll see how the rest of the season is in terms of wins and losses. But you get your starting quarterback in next year's draft for 2026, and you move forward. I think the future's bright right now for the Cleveland Browns.
Nick, this game's in London. What do the international games, what impact does that have on the betting lines?
I would say not much, unless you know that the field is going to be a disaster, like it was like last year in Brazil in week one with the Eagles and the Packers, where the players were sliding all over the place. And to be fair, like, we did see that a little bit last week in the Dublin game, where Justin Jefferson slipped a couple times, where that could have negated some longer gains for him. Now, we've seen way more London games, obviously, so you would think that everything will kind of be good enough this week. I really don't think it has anything to do with anything as far as this matchup is concerned. So you know, Browns at more than a field goal. I think it's a low scoring game, and I think the Browns can keep this one relatively close.
Always a pleasure, my friend.
You got it. Wishing everyone minimal sweats, winning bets, the absolute very best of luck. Let's go, Guardians.
Making this decision at quarterback, you might end up being right on that. You might be. But you can't tell me that 4 weeks in, this is where they thought the offense would be, because it's not just bad. It's not functional. And if you cannot function, you're giving no one, most specifically that defense, a chance to win on any one of these games.
Yeah, it's really that simple, dude. And like, I know a lot of people, like, remember in the Hugh Jackson times when people would get so sick of the Ken responses?
I like
responses.
That you said that like it was 30 years ago.
I mean, it was just like, it's like an era that's been buried and forgotten, and I think for good reason. But I remember, like, in those days, like, people would hate.
I remember the times of COVID. in the dewy slopes of 2020.
People would
I'm still
hate.
Old then. I'm old now.
People would hate when Hugh would just do the, like, gotta watch the tape, this, that, the third. And I think some of
that... We got
one
of those from Kevin this week.
And I was like,
oh, man.
Some of that's starting to creep in with Kevin, where people are like, okay, well, you continue to say that you have to play better, you have to coach better, you have to block better, you have to do everything better offensively. And the thing is, though, like, I don't know that this is a canned response. Like, I think the offense is that putrid right now that he's being honest. They have to do everything better. It's been that busted.
Yeah, and I think, you know, for every reason that Joe Flacco was named the starter week one, which is he's a veteran, he's been there before, he knows what the expectations are, he knows how to ride the highs and lows of the first few weeks, none of that stopped, or all of that stopped giving you any small modicum of benefit when he just became unplayable. Like, this is where I do think the Browns' hands were tied a little bit. You can't do anything with not playable. You can't do anything with non-functional. Do I know that Dylan's got it? No. As a matter of fact, of the two quarterbacks you've got on this roster that might be here in a year, he's the one I believe less of. But if I'm to believe what they liked about him in the pre-draft process, he's walking into a situation that's better fit for him than it was for Joe. Hey, we want you to check down, and we want you to not turn the ball over. That's not Joe Flacco. That's Dylan Gabriel, right? Hey, we want you, you know, you got to make the right reads up front. But if you made the wrong read in production and pressure hit you off the backside, you got to move around to buy yourself an extra second to get the ball out cleanly, right? Even the procedural stuff. Like, I think that was another, like, nail in the coffin of Joe. There was some procedural stuff late in that game that told you those guys were really starting to check out on the idea they could win. Mistakes that they had not made the first 3 weeks. I listen, they will be judged on whether it works or not. Yep. And they should be, because you got 5 years before this decision. This does feel like the decision of, all right, we gotta try something in the same vein. We gotta give these guys a chance to win in the locker room. That was the Joe Flacco logic going into week one. This was, we gotta give these guys a chance to win before it gets too late, where all of a sudden we're in evaluation mode across the board.
Dude, and you, like, not to mention, you got 13 more games to go, like, just to get to the finish line of this thing. So there's two sides of that. Like, there's one side of, that's a pretty nice sample size. And if Dylan Gabriel does play well, it's like, okay, you played well over 13 games. That's really good. And that's something that we could build off of for the future. Inversely, if things don't go well, it brings up this scary question of, where do you go from here? Because you got to at least find a way to compete in all of these. You got to find a way to at least field a team in all of these games. And if things go poorly, obviously, like, they named Joe Flacco the backup quarterback this week. Like, do you go back to Joe? And then what does that message does that send? Like, all of this gets very spooky very early if things don't work well for Dylan Gabriel. And I hate putting that much pressure on a third round pick. Like, this is supposed to be a developmental guy. When you look at third round quarterbacks, like, you're looking at, like, the Desmond Ridders of the world more often than you're looking at the Dak Prescotts of the world. There are a reason why most starting quarterbacks in the league were first round picks.
216-474-0092. So as it relates to Dylan Gabriel, does this move give you hope? Dustin in D.C., I do have a word of warning for everybody shortly, but Dustin, welcome to the show, buddy.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. And I'm going to say this in regards to that. Did you listen to Stefanski today? Did you listen to Flacco? Did you listen to Gabriel?
Yes, sir.
Everybody was professional. And I'll say this. I'm going to say Big Nick, Little Nick. Little Nick, I was very disappointed in your tweet about 90 minutes ago because there was nothing funny about that. Mm. There was one person in that room that acted like a clown. Mm. One.
Yeah.
Everybody else was professional. Professional. And what are you looking for? If you're trying to change the narrative, what are you looking for? You're looking for professionalism. That's what you want. Give me that guy all day. Give me Gabriel all day. That kid sat up there. He answered every question. He did it with tact. He did it with respect. And there was nothing funny about what that continues the narrative. There was nothing funny about that. It shouldn't be condoned behavior.
You're talking about Shador mimicry?
Yeah. Shador just being a mime clown. There's one clown. That's him. That's why. There's your combine. There's why every single team passed on that dude multiple times throughout the course of the draft.
Because he studied mimicry in France with the legendary Marcel Marceau?
Nick, cut the shtick. You know, bro.
Oh, that was close.
Come on. Okay. No, I'm not going to curse. Nick, you and I have been doing this since your evening show. Okay. We have many Jordan LeBron debates. Sorry. But like, no, you know, man, like you can't do that as a professional. Is that?
Wait, what side of the Jordan LeBron debate is he on?
Nick, the Mr. Right Wilson, would you look at Shador and you saw that behavior today? Is that somebody that's going to lead you to a Super Bowl? Honestly.
Well, let me ask you, do you know the rest of his relationship with the other players? Because if they like him, then yes. If they don't like him or don't believe in him, then no. But in fairness, one video, which we'll get into at some point in this next couple hours, one video is not like there weren't dudes in that locker room like, this is why I won't follow him onto the field. Those dudes just want to win. Dudes just want to compete.
And like,
they don't
he's
get
just having
sure.
fun. Dustin, he's just having fun. He's a third string quarterback. Like, what's he supposed to do?
Be a professional. Do what Gabriel did. Gabriel was a backup. You want to reach backup status? Be a professional. Don't do that. Don't be a sideshow. Just get your
here's the thing. And I thank you for the call, buddy. Good stuff as always. I don't get how today that took over everything.
Dude, people are big. Could we pause the show for a moment? Because people are big mad. People are not just a little bit mad. People are big mad that Shador, and if you haven't seen the video, he was asked about Dylan Gabriel being the starting quarterback. He was asked about the fact that he was still the third string and Flacco was the backup, and he didn't answer anything. Instead, he mimed his answers like with his hands and just mouthed words.
That's how one mimes.
And it was funny. Like it was funny. And that
just hearing you describe it was pretty funny
like,
to me.
Obviously, that comes off the heels of everybody kind of construing what he said last week, and that he said that he was ready to play, and that meant that he was prepared to go on the field whenever that time came. But Rex Ryan took that and ran with it in a completely awkward direction. So, like, everybody's proving Shador Sanders' point that anything that he does or says will be used against him.
Specific to the Shador thing, which we will get to in exhausting detail later in today's show.
People are so mad about it, bro.
The people talking about Shador now instead of Dylan Gabriel are the same people that when we talked about Shador in camp said, why are you talking about Shador? He's a third string quarterback. The homers have only been replying. I have not heard too many of the Shahive go on the offensive Shador. They have just been playing the defensive. I'm sure we'll get into that. But here's my beware of what's ahead for Dylan Gabriel. It is important that he wins on Sunday. The reality is, if they play better but still don't win, and that's the way we talk about this for the next 6 weeks, we're going to be seeing Shador at the end of 6 weeks' time. It's that simple. The difference between Gardner Minshew as a rookie and, let's say, somebody who kept their job was winning. Gardner Minshew, statistically, in Jacksonville, that rookie year as a 6th-round pick, was fine. He was decent. He was inoffensive. Right? didn't have enough wins, so they moved on from him in a completely different direction, which ended up being the Trevor Lawrence direction. So winning is really, we can say, well, we got to get to functional. Well, that's the first thing. Sunday is about functionality. Can you be a functional offense? But here's where it gets really dicey. It doesn't stay functional forever. There is a statute of limitations on how long functional is. I would guess it's somewhere between 2 to 3 nice games. And then after that, it becomes, well, what can do more than functional? And then we're going to keep doing that until we get you to the highest level of the escalator, which is, are you a franchise quarterback or not? At which point, if it's no, most fans are going to throw you off the ride. So the truth is, and this is where I think the Browns have to understand it, unless he is Brock Purdy, right? Unless he is Tom Brady. And I know Tom Brady didn't play until his second year, but hear me out. Unless he's a guy that's ready to come in and win and play well, and we're talking about that's what takes the narrative over the next 4 to 5 weeks, we're going to have an up and down a seesaw kind of year. We just replaced the Baker wars for the Watson wars. Well, now we're in the Gabriel small skirmish until it becomes a larger battle. But like, that's where we are. And the goalposts that we have for this kid today will not be the goalposts we have in 3 weeks' time, depending on how well he plays from here on out.
Agreed. Like, right now, I think if you polled Browns fans on what does Dylan Gabriel need to do for you to be encouraged by his performance on Sunday, people will give you the most vanilla answers imaginable. People would tell you...
The Dylan Gabriel of answers?
Yeah, like...
Would you say?
Well, that's funny. They would be like... If he could just get a couple of first downs, if he could move the football down the field.
He's just
got to
take one series at a time.
Hit the layups. Hey, I love that one.
Hey, this is not about one guy. It's about 11 guys working together as a team.
Yep.
All right? Come on now. Come on.
Get all the coach speak in there.
And hey, to the degree of my short issues, there's a fella, you might have heard of him once upon a time, biblical times, called him David. Did pretty well against Goliath. Thank you very much.
He did.
He's a tiny little guy. See? So I just basically gave Dylan, I would say, 10 strong minutes before or after the game on Sunday. You're welcome.
Oh, Brian Flores might be licking his chops, dude.
Well, it is how I recall that Brian is not the biggest fan of undersized, left-handed throwing quarterbacks with Samoan bloodlines. I'm just saying.
I remember that from somewhere. Where could it have been?
He might, you know, just kind of like skits out on Sunday and just be like, Tua, we must break him. And it's like, no, he's no longer your quarterback. You don't have to break him, but still go ahead and do that because he's the other team's quarterback.
He's ours now, and we didn't spend a first round pick on him.
This time, the funny thing is, ruining this left-handed slight Samoan quarterback might get you a job, whereas the last time you did it, it cost you your job. Football's cyclical. Yeah.
It is a twisted game. And this is a sickness. The fact that, like, by Sunday, I will talk myself into that Dylan Gabriel can have this offense functioning and that they're going to win.
I've already got it. Our buddy Dustin, who works over in the sales side today, even gave me the ability. He's like, you say him, you tell the people that I said it. And I was like, we'll see. And but he was like, why can't he be the guy? I was like, you realize this is the logic. I'm not saying it won't. I'm just saying that when the whole thing is, but Tom Brady, right? Jalen Hurts, when you just start mentioning second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round quarterbacks, just because it has happened, if that's like your specific example for this time, usually that's fallen on false logic. I'm not saying we can't have the conversation. I'm here for the conversation, but I'm hearing a lot of the same conversations I had with Cody Kessler and before that, Colt McCoy.
Oh,
and
no.
I think there was a smattering of it during the Ratliff era. See? So important, I even forgot his damn name.
The Kevin Hogan Wars.
Hogan's Heroes? Yeah. Yeah.
They were out in a vengeance at one point. Late in a cold winter in the 2010s, they were out.
Hogan's Heroes?
Oh, yeah.
Any reference to a show, a movie of something?
Uh-oh.
I mean, listen, you didn't get Goonies. There's no way.
This is where like, I
Hogan's Heroes was on when my dad was a kid. You still fail. But I give you a slight bit of mercy in that failure because I'm that kind of guy. 216.
You got to at least tell me what it is.
It's a TV show.
Okay.
Yeah. feel like I could have given you more details, but we're up against it. 216-474-0092. Should Dylan Gabriel have a longer leash than Joe Flacco? That's something we'll expand upon in about 20 minutes time, but quick hits in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. I thought of a way that I thought we could really get to the nits and grits of Dylan Gabriel, Browns quarterback, and where the expectations are. Because whomever is going to be the long-term starter, you need to consistently have you in the playoff picture for the next 3 to 4 years. That's the bare minimum. And that is, if Shador goes in at any point this season, that's the bar that eventually you got to get to at some point this year with that player. So I'm going to start at the high end of what I think Dylan Gabriel, or some of the guys that he's been compared to, like his impact, right? I want you to tell me what that means if he's this guy. If Dylan Gabriel is Kirk Cousins. So again, Kirk was a early fourth round pick, but fringe third, fourth rounder. In fairness, he didn't start till I want to say year three or year four consistently for Washington. But if he is that level, the Browns will be a playoff contending team for the next 3 to 4 years. Agree or disagree?
Agree wholeheartedly. Like I think Kirk Cousins level play is the one that you talk about, even with the defense that you have, assuming that you can keep it as dominant or close to as dominant as right now. That's the type of one where you're talking about deep playoff runs, and you're talking about basically a guy that can just sustain the offense, and then the defense is going to pick him up. You can make like Super Bowl type runs with a guy like Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, I mean, if Dylan Gabriel is Kirk Cousins, then I was massively wrong about him. I thought Shador was more of a Kirk Cousins, physically similar. I think both Kirk Cousins and Shador fit this system, what Kevin wants to do, as much as you possibly can. Dylan's had more success as a smaller quarterback out of the shotgun offense. He's going to have some quick grown up to do behind, playing under center a little bit more with a play action game. I think Kirk Cousins would be so much better than what I think Dylan's probably going to be. But yeah, I mean, I think if we're talking about from like 17 to 22 Kirk Cousins, so 2017 and maybe 2016 to 2022 Kirk Cousins, that's a guy who on a better team with this defense, with a better head coach, no offense, Jay Gruden, I think would have had a couple playoff wins. It's a stretch for me to think he can be Kirk Cousins just because he doesn't have the physicality of Kirk. Kirk's not a huge guy, but he's like an average size NFL quarterback when it comes to height, and he's got a decent build on him, right?
Yeah, and again, like Kirk was felt like at least a good stretch in Minnesota, like a perennial playoff quarterback, right? Like he was a guy that would get you there and operate the offense. I mean, we watched him even with the Falcons throw for 500 yards. Like Kirk has high upside compared to what he was supposed to be by far. If you got Kirk Cousins in the third round, like that's a win. That is a guy that you start year after year. That is a consistent starter that you feel comfortable with.
216-474-0092. You get to plug the quarterback name in and play along with us. If Dylan Gabriel is fill in the blank, the Browns will be a playoff contender team for the next 3 to 4 years. So we're looking for somebody. So it's a validation thing. It can only be true if you plug in the right quarterback name. Now, here's a tricky one, because he's a smaller version, and I think JP's called him Welfare Tua. I've called him Timu Tua, because that's far more insulting, and I kind of think it's funny. If Dylan Gabriel is Tua Tagovailoa, are the Browns a playoff-caliber team for the next 3 to 4 years?
And we're talking healthy Tua, right?
Yeah.
Like, we're not taking injuries into
like
account.
Like, not sending him back out there with, like head injuries and things like that.
Yeah, I think if you get there, you're like a fringe playoff team. Like that's kind of where I sit with Tua. Like there's games where he looks really good. There's games where he looks really bad. Like you'd be a team on the bubble most years. You'd get in some years. You'd probably fall short some years.
I feel like Tua's the new Jared Goff, where I know he's better than what people think, but mm-hmm. I still don't know how good he really is. And it's funny because, like, statistically, he's a very good quarterback. Like, if you look at him, like, Mike McDaniel's the smart kind of head coach who can kind of make it look a certain way in the box score, even if you watch the film and it's like, oh, my God, this guy does a lot of really dumb stuff, and he really does, like, not that physically talented, right? I would actually probably say no. I think Kirk Cousins, at his best, is better than Tua has ever been. And I think Tua on this team is probably, has you consistent. So In the periphery, yes. In the periphery, yes. But consistently in the playoffs, no.
Yeah, that's
no, what, I don't think so.
Yeah, so we're really kind of on the same page. Like I said, he's like a fringe. You're probably in sometimes, not in sometimes. Like you might.
I think your floor is probably 6 or 7 wins with Tua.
Yeah.
But your ceiling is probably 10 wins and maybe one season. If it's really good, you're like a 12 win team, right?
Yeah. It's probably somewhere in that range, especially with the Browns defense and being what it is. Like you could probably sneak into 12 wins there, but you're not going to string together a bunch of playoff wins or anything. You're not going to consistently be in the playoffs with the Tua quarterback.
It's also kind of tough just to see him being this quarterback this year. Like I think when you're talking about a third round quarterback that literally just got drafted, I think the toughest thing about this exercise is just how far or how good are they initially? Because like if I'm the Browns, if he's great on Sunday and you win, it's great. But like really, what you're just hoping for is you get enough juice out of the offense, you stop with the self-inflicting crap, and then you win the game, and then we just see from there, right? Like that's. Winning's more important than Dylan Gabriel looking like the second coming of Kirk Cousins in 2017 when he threw for like 4,000 yards, right?
You're putting winning above him looking like the second coming of Kirk Cousins?
Yes.
I think if he looked like the second coming of Kirk Cousins, we're in a much better spot than if we win the game tomorrow.
Yeah, no. I think you have to win. No, because here's the thing. Winning allows you to then have what will be the step back games. Like, the whole point of winning is, if you're 0-7, but the stats look good with him, we're going to say, well, it doesn't matter what the stats look like, you're 0-7. Whereas, if you're 5-2, and you've played like Tua Tagovailoa, we're going to be like, okay, we'll answer that other question down the road, but you're 5-2, that's all that really matters.
I don't want to rehash the same argument from last segment. I don't understand
this. And by the way, it was two segments ago.
Totally you're different. Right. You're right. It was two
don't
segments
be ridiculous.
Ago. I don't understand it, though. I really don't understand.
You don't understand the importance of winning?
No, I understand the importance of winning. Just when you have no expectations for a team and you go to a rookie quarterback, if that rookie quarterback looks like he can be a guy that if he's Kirk Cousins, I mean, legitimately, if he played like a prime Kirk Cousins tomorrow or on Sunday, then you go through and that's a guy that you could trust to play quarterback for the next at least 5 years.
It'll still be a game of good quarterback play. Winning allows you just to keep developing on the job. Winning and playing bad is better than playing good and losing. Because at some point, you're going to hit a pivot point, and you have to pivot to Shador. Or you have to pivot back to Joe. Like, losing is the only thing guaranteed where nobody gets what they want out of this, and winning's the one thing that keeps you on the merry-go-round for another week. Because we're really fighting a time thing with Teemu Tua. Like, we're really just fighting. He just needs to stay on the field and keep progressing. I don't think you progress in a losing environment. I don't think you progress if you're 1-6 in the next 7 weeks.
You don't think Drake May progressed in his rookie season? Because they won 4 games that year.
Yeah,
and then they stuck with him as the franchise quarterback and are very happy with the decision right now.
Do I think they would that he would have progressed quicker if he was winning? Yes. Sure.
Yeah.
Yes. I think it's really, really hard. I'm not saying it's impossible, and more often than not, with a young quarterback. You got to lose with a young quarterback so he can learn how to win and the rest of the team can learn how to win. And it takes time to build around. I'm well aware of all that. That's not where we are. Stefanski might be coaching for his job. He is coaching for his job. I don't know why anyone's even debating that at this point. You do have veterans on this team that are ready to win. Like, you have some elements of a team that you can compete with in different scenarios, namely this defense. So, like, this idea that just because you're going to the rookie, I got to pull my punches and be like, well, you just go out there, a little slugger, and you try real hard. No, it's the NFL. And I'm done with this. They've decided this is the guy, and I have to trust them. But that trust is built or burnt on Sunday. And winning absolutely matters more than anything else, because that's how the NFL goes. Brock Purdy at 4-13 ain't $50 million. Brock Purdy at 13-4 is.
I think this entire conversation changes if it starts in week 7. I think nobody cares about the fact. If they were 1-5 under Joe and he starts in week 7, nobody cares whether or not he actually wins football
games.
Yeah,
but they went to him when it was still the winnable part of the season.
Yeah, but they didn't want to. It was not the desire.
But then they made a big stink out of doing it, though.
Yeah, but
if they didn't want to do it, if this was a hostage situation, I think it would have leaked out at some point.
Well, basically, Joe has held you hostage with this play over the last 4 weeks. That's what it is. I mean, Joe is holding you hostage by the fact that you have to make the move.
All right, 216-474-0092. We're playing the quarterback game here. Insert the name of the quarterback that if Dylan Gabriel is this quarterback, the Browns will be a playoff caliber team for the next 3 to 4 years. Now, this is the tough one, Brock Purdy. Because I think physically, this is as close to Brock Purdy as it gets, other than the fact one dude's a lefty and the other's a righty.
I mean, it's... And, like, I'm not the biggest Brock Purdy believer and probably didn't think he deserved to get the contract that he did. I still think if you play like Brock Purdy, the 49ers have kind of shown you that's good enough with the defense on the other side. Like, a lot of the Brock Purdy not success with the 49ers also came tagged along with injuries to key players, injuries to stars. Like, I think a healthy 49ers team with Brock at the helm would have continued to be in the playoffs, a competitive football team. So I think I have to say yes.
So the 49ers, the first 17 games with Brock Purdy as a starter. Wait, that's not right. 21 games. Math is hard. They went 17-4 since then. So 24 on, he is 7-10.
Yeah. Again, I think injuries probably play into that too, right? Like they're missing CMC for a big part of last
year.
So
I think this is where entry point matters. Mm-hmm. If you put Dylan, okay, if Dylan's ceiling is Brock Purdy-ish, and you put him in the team that was ready made to win a Super Bowl, which is when Brock Purdy took over for San Francisco, then yes, I think you could. The problem is, while the defense, the defensive line is stacked, you still have holes in the secondary. Your linebacker room, I'm still TBD on outside of Carson Schwessinger, even though I'm a big Diabate guy. You need a new offensive line. You need a number one wide receiver. I think Quinshon's the truth at running back, but we're about three games into that. The rest of the season will bear out. Like, no, I think it's way too early to say if Dylan is the guy who I think physically, undersized quarterback with not the strongest arm in the room, a guy who is more mobile, but people have turned him into Michael Vick. He's not vanilla Vick. Like, he is... He's much more mobile, but he's not a mobile quarterback, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, he had like a 4.8 40. It wasn't fast.
And so entry point to a team that I think, best case scenario, if Cam Ward is on the team, you're still probably 1-3. Yeah, I think it's a little aggressive to be like, if this year he's Brock Purdy. Like, if next year he's Brock Purdy, it might be enough. And the year after that, I think it will be if you're, you know, three successful drafts in. But today... guys, Brock Purdy is 7-10 in his last 2 years because that roster's fallen around him, proving my point on Brock Purdy. If you have a good team around him, you're going to be successful. If you don't, you're going to be paying a lot of money for a quarterback that is just okay.
Yeah, like I think if you picked up one more talented star and bolstered the offensive line, then you're saying yes to this question. I agree with you, though. If it's this iteration of the team right now, like if he played like Brock Purdy on Sunday, yeah, you're probably capping out at like 7-8 wins.
Brett on Twitter saying, if Dylan Gabriel is Kirk Cousins, it would be a miracle, a Nick Wilson miracle. I just think it's the funniest thing that you did this. You did the dalliance with Baker, and then we got to go to Deshaun because we're only to land with a quarterback that I think is lesser physically talented than Baker, who also doesn't have the personality that I really like. It's like, wait. We just did this whole thing, and somehow I got Teemu Tua. What did I do to deserve this, Lord? When did I ask for this? 216-474-0092. Very excited for Sunday, though. If Dylan Gabriel is Kirk Cousins, Tua Tagovailoa, Brock Purdy, with any one of those three quarterbacks, would the Browns be a playoff-caliber team for the next 3 to 4 seasons? College football news is Pete Futek joins us as he does every single Thursday at 4:20. We'll get into the slate of big action in college football in 5 minutes with Pete on 92.3 The Fan.
You're going to consult with your offensive coordinator and your front office and everything else. Kevin said it was my decision. Sure it was. Put a lot of input into that. We'll see, Dan. You know, what we do know is this, and not to be a smart guy, the offense wasn't working very well. First four games, they scored 16, 17, 13, and 10 points. And those numbers are burned into my brain. That's not good. It's not good enough to win in the NFL. They somehow managed to win a game against a good Green Bay Packer team by scoring 13 points. Congratulations, you stole one. And now they've got to start putting up points.
The offense was repugnant. Whatever you can do.
Oh, nice word.
Whatever you can do to fix a repugnant offense, you should do.
It's a good word.
It's unwatchable. It was horrendous. You spent the whole time wanting to throw the remote through the TV because it just hurt. It was boring. So if Dylan Gabriel being able to run around and move means that this offense could score points, could be more creative, can work a little bit better, then do it. I'm in. Let's go.
Now, they talked about Brian Flores, the defensive coordinator for the Minnesota Vikings. For what it's worth, the Vikings are 2-2 coming into this game. All of their opponents except one, the Cincinnati Bengals with Jake Browning at quarterback instead of Joe Burrow, all of their opponents scored at least 22 points. The Vikings beat the Bears 27-24, but they lost to the Falcons 22-6, and they lost to the Steelers 24-21. So other teams have been able to put up points against the Minnesota Vikings defense, and it's a good defense. Other teams except the Cincinnati Bengals. It's a good defense, and Flores is a terrific defensive coordinator. And we'll see if the Browns are able to do it with Dylan Gabriel. What are you expecting? What are you looking for? What do you think the Browns are going to do? And obviously he said, we have enough in our playbook that we can tailor things to either quarterback.
Hope is a good thing.
Oh, here you go.
Sometimes the best of things, and no good thing ever dies.
By the way, I have to watch Shawshank anytime I'm flipping through.
Oh, so do
and there
I
it
gotta
is.
Stop.
I gotta stop at the very least and see where it is.
Yes, without question. And there are certain times where it's like, you know what, we're watching through the commercial break. At least there. I mean, if they're on the roof, you're staying through the commercial.
Absolutely.
Break. So, with that being said, I hope we see some quarterback rollouts. I hope we see under center. I hope we see some designed throws that are very much like you will take the ball, you will take six steps and deliver the ball right here on time and on target. I hope they give him some layups in the offense. Easy plays that he is comfortable with. I hope they do everything they can to make this as easy on Dylan Gabriel to move the ball forward as possible. But more than anything, I hope, pray, and plea that they run the freaking football.
Yep.
That's where I am. Run the ball. Set up play action. Get some easy throws for your quarterback. You have a rookie quarterback. You need to make life easy on him because he's going to probably have a hard time finding the mic in a Brian at Flores defense because Flores moves everything everywhere and it's a blank slate every time you stand behind the center.
Fred's in Cleveland. Hi, Fred.
How are you, Fred?
Hey, how you doing? I had a question, man. I'm just so curious, right? We putting Dylan Gabriel in. All right, cool. If Gabriel goes out there and can't see over the line, can't move the ball like we think he can, how do you justify when you do get to Shador this season, because I think we're going to see him, how are the Browns going to justify getting not playing Shador if Shador, when he gets out there, looks like, okay, we may have to rethink drafting another QB next year?
Pretty easily, Fred. Just throw your hands up and go, he wasn't ready at the time. He learned a little bit more. He got a little bit smarter. He saw some more tape. He read the field a little bit better, and he was good to go.
Wow. Okay.
If I got a feeling that's the answer you're going to get.
Let me twist. But I want to hear your answer. I want to hear your guys' thoughts. Like, what would, if you were the fly on the wall, like, how would you come back if Dylan Gabriel goes out there and stinks in London, right? And you got to move to Shador. Do you move to Flacco if Gabriel stinks? Or do you, what do you do now?
I would do this, Fred. And first of all, let me twist it for you. What if Dylan Gabriel goes out against Minnesota and looks really good on Sunday? Then you're asking the same question that you just posed about Shador, which is, well, why didn't you do this earlier? Same thing. I said this earlier. I said it when it was announced. I would do this, Fred. If in-game something happens to Dylan Gabriel on Sunday and he gets hurt, I'm going to go with Flacco. And if I know Gabriel can't go the next game, I'm going to start Shador. I'm going to give him all week to prep. I'm going to get him ready, and I'm going to throw him out there because I personally had seen enough of Joe Flacco before this season ever started to say on this show that I didn't want Joe Flacco as the starting quarterback. So if something happens to Gabriel, or if he's incredibly ineffective after a couple of games, or if he gets hurt, I'm going to start Shador because I don't need to see any more of Joe Flacco.
Can I ask you one more question?
Yes, sir.
Now, the offensive line is responsible for the quarterback's, most of the quarterback's success, right? Like
a good portion of it.
A chunk of it, yeah.
Good portion of it.
All right. Now, at what point do we start blaming the line? That's I'll take that off air. I just, at what point do we hold them accountable and stop saying everybody else needs to run better, catch better? We get that. But if a QB don't got time, I don't care who you put behind there. You're setting them up for failure.
All right, Fred, thank you.
Now, I mean, I don't think you've hidden your thoughts. I don't think I've hidden my thoughts either. The tackle position has been an abomination.
Well, it's been an abomination because your two starters got hurt.
Yep.
And the two guys that you signed to be the backups, Leviston coming in late from the Rams, and Cornelius Lucas, who you signed in the offseason, aren't ready or capable of being the type of starting tackle you want.
Correct.
We'll see if Cam Robinson plays this week. If he steps in and plays at left tackle ahead of Lucas, we'll see.
And I wouldn't hold my breath on that
one. And then Munford coming in as well. So you did bring in two different tackles. We'll see who plays on Sunday. I think that might be a really interesting thing.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey friends, it's Ken Carmen.
And Anthony Lima.
Did you know that the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima is both a radio show and a podcast?
You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by the hour, or jump straight to the highlights.
Just open up your favorite podcast app, search our names, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show.
Your way and on your time.